Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
APS was questioned 2 years ago, and Gary Pierce was also involved in that because he said the FBI showed up at his house and was asking questions. There are also some witnesses during the trial who discussed participating in that investigation.
Mr. Norton is glad to have this matter behind him so that he can get back to assisting his clients.
Sometimes I don't like the questions you ask. Sometimes you don't like the answers that I give. But you're doing your job, and I think I'll be held accountable for the relationship that I have with our media, which I think is open and accessible.
I believe that Trump has a huge impact on the down ballot. So basically, this year, if you have an R next to your name, you're going to feel that down ballot effect of Trump with the folks that may not agree with the way he conducts himself.
And with us to talk about prosecutors' decision not to refile charges related to the recent Corporation Commission-related trial and other political news, our former state lawmaker Stan Barnes, head of Copper State Consulting, and attorney Tom Ryan. Guys, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Tom, I'm going to start with you on this one because I know you have a lot of passion as it relates to what we're calling this Corporation Commission trial and involved George Johnson as well. What's your reaction to prosecutors' decision to not go after a refiling in this particular area of the case?
Well, it's a bit disappointing. We have a huge issue of conflicts of interest running with the Arizona Corporation Commission. And there was a very strong evidence of pay-to-play, so to speak, with between Johnson Utilities and a former corporation commissioner. Bribery cases, public corruption cases, are difficult to bring, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't bring them. So I will give credit where credit is due that they actually prosecuted this, but I'm disappointed that they've decided not to retry it after the mistrial.
You know, it seems to me that there's a direct connection to what the feds are doing to Manafort on the national level. They all but admitted that this was to squeeze Gary Pierce for the bigger thing that they're interested in.
The ghost lobby.
The ghost lobby thing. Well, and High Grid. I think I'm getting
High
the name.
Grid, you're
High
right.
Grid. Ghost lobby was the other one. And on the courthouse steps, they tried to get Jim Norton and Gary Pierce to make a deal, testify in the bigger thing. The feds spent much of the time trying to, you know, build a fence between those two, even while they're trying to make a deal on those. It all failed out. And so now the political world is wondering, is the High Grid investigation damaged by the failure over here? The government seems to be doing that to Manafort. I mean, they're going back 15 years on his taxes to squeeze him about Trump, and that's the relationship I'm pointing out.
I don't see the same as with Manafort. Manafort's got some real trouble. But sticking to the Corporation Commission here today, they have a huge image problem, and the ghost lobby trial is just part of it. And as long as they continue, I mean, they've gutted the anti-conflict of interest statute, and instead of helping clean up the Corporation Commission's image, allowing them to get further and deeper into conflict of interest images, issues rather, has damaged their image.
Stan, what's the politics behind this? Let's look at that as far as what Tom's saying, the possibility of this in some ways damaging the overall Corporation Commission. I mean, do enough people like us pay enough attention to it? It still seems to be the most sort of secretive panel there is in the state. People are very focused on their legislative district, congressional district. What about this? Does this sort of case turn that around or not make a difference?
Yeah, we have a social political science experiment playing out in front of us with Tom Farese, who's the chairman of the commission and the subject of a lot of gossip and meaning his connection to Arizona Public Service, who spent a few million dollars to get him elected, allegedly. He won't own up to it. Maybe we did, maybe we didn't. That's their official line. And Farese has suffered 4 years of bad headlines over that. And yet, I believe he's going to win the race. And because I think the old adage is going to hold, just spell my name right. And when people get down ballot in the fog of the election, they're going to say, "I who do I vote for? I recognize that name, and I think he's going to win out." That's the point you're making. This thing is hyper political, but it's gonna roll different than you might think.
I want to go back to your original thought, though, which is, hey, the Arizona Corporation Commission is this kind of secretive organization. It's the most powerful organization in the state of Arizona. It has judicial powers. It has legislative powers. It has executive powers. And we grant these massive corporations like Arizona Public Service marketplace monopolies, and in exchange, they agree to be regulated by the Arizona Corporation Commission. When the Corporation Commission is co-opted because they're elected by money coming from APS or Johnson Utilities, then this is the result. We have this ugly, messy-looking Corporation Commission that's not doing its job. It's co-opted.
Stan, you referenced the idea that this trial, the ghost lobby trial, was maybe looking at getting a bigger fish. Given the fact that there was a mistrial and prosecutors aren't going to refile charges here, what do you think that does to that bigger fish, that other case that prosecutors were working on?
Yeah, and in my world, everyone's been waiting for that big shoe to drop. The feds have talked about investigating the 2014 election. There's three or four different silos of scandal there. And then all of a sudden we get this Johnson-Pierce thing. That came out first. And we later learned that the squeeze was on with Gary Pierce. He didn't buckle on that for whatever reason, and now the feds got nothing in their hands. So all the gossip in the cafes of downtown Phoenix is, well, does this mean the other big fish doesn't play out? And of course, we don't know, but that is the buzz for everyone now.
Look, our Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, has made public corruption and bribery cases much more difficult. If you remember, Governor McConnell in Virginia was convicted in that state of public corruption, and it was overturned on an 8-0 decision. And they really made the concept of public corruption so narrow as to be almost impossible to prove. And I think that played a part in this ghost lobby trial.
Tom, one more legal question for you. I actually read Bob Robb's column this morning, but he talked about some of the difficulty of when federal officials, DOJ, come into what is essentially in many ways a local case like that, though it may be something bigger than that. And I don't know if this is a DOJ issue or not. Arizona, of course, had its share of corruption cases with Azscam. Bob Robb in the column mentioned Ben Arredondo from Tempe. Quickly, from a legal standpoint, is that difficult to have a drop-in by the feds in a situation like this?
It is. As you recall, Tom Horn was under investigation. We've had a number of federal investigations here that have not panned out. There's a great book by a Pulitzer Prize-winning author named Jesse Eisinger, E-I-S-I-N-G-E-R. He has a very impolitic name, which I won't say. It's called The Chicken Poop Club. You can fill in the blank. And it's why the Department of Justice is having difficulty with public corruption cases, specifically going after individuals. Whether you're Republican or Democrat, it's really a worthwhile read.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to politics, which is a lot more fun to talk about, I guess. Stan, we're going to get to the U.S. Senate race, of course, in a bit. But this week, interesting goings-on in CD1 on the GOP side. There are three candidates that we've heard a lot about. We have Steve Smith, we have Tiffany Shedd, we have Wendy Rogers. Wendy Rogers has run for office many times before. Maybe the Evan Meekum of her generation, Stan, I point out.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
So, but there is a fight going on between Steve Smith and Wendy Rogers over certain things related to Steve Smith's private agency that he's involved in, and there's a fight, and Rogers and Smith are trying to get each other to drop out. It just makes sense of this for us, would you?
Yes, Dan. Undo this Gordian knot.
Thanks for that hairball. Let me take that. It's desperation meets money meets ambition. Wendy has decided that there's no limit to what she will say or do to win. I don't know her that well personally, and so that may sound pretty harsh, but that's what it looks like to me, because what she did to Steve Smith seems like really outrageous to me. And so the unfortunate thing, if you're a Republican center-right type of guy like myself, is this intramural civil war is going to ensure that Tom O'Halloran, the congressman, will get reelected in that district. If there was a chance to beat him, and that's a long shot. You needed a united Republican front. They are so badly fractured that everyone who doesn't win is going to sit on their hands or vote for O'Halloran, and he'll win again.
This is just an unfortunate thing. Wendy Rogers has gone after Steve Smith because he was associated with a modeling agency. And the modeling agency did some advertising on Facebook and other social media platforms. Some of them probably less than stellar, but the idea that somehow Steve Smith is out there purveying pornography is simply ridiculous. And when you go to the website for the modeling agency, They're very nice-looking young ladies who are appropriately dressed. The worst you could say is they're in a bikini. I think we've moved way beyond morality wars over bikinis in the United States, but apparently not Wendy Rogers.
Stan, do you think this is really the kind of thing where after the primary, despite all this going on, the two candidates who don't win don't come together and say, yeah, all that's behind us. Let's go beat the Democrat in November?
I do. I there's going to be no healing this up. Unfortunately.
And because of the nature of the allegations?
Yeah, because in this case, the nature of the allegations. But all the things we don't know about that haven't made the papers are just as scarring, and the knives are out, and these people really hate each other, these Republican candidates. And so there's no space for personal relationship in that. And the New World Order is, if my guy's not the nominee, then I'm either going to sit on my hands, as I said a moment ago, or I'm at a spite going to put that other guy in because I'm so mad at my brother, I'm gonna throw in with the other guy. That's in my own opinion, that's how Janet Napolitano became governor in 2002 for that same phenomenon. And that's what Republicans do to one another in Arizona.
So do you think that these series of allegations, the press conference and statements and all that we heard this week, does that move the needle at all in this race, do you think, one way or the other?
Yeah, because people have a hot ballot on their kitchen table right now. And there's Steve Smith looking tall and good looking with all these police guys behind him saying, I was done wrong. And I think it was good for Steve, weirdly, in terms of it actually will help him because he got some attention. And he needs the attention to break out of that crowd.
But you raise a good point when you bring up about Janet Napolitano, because as you recall, when she ran, Joe Arpaio came out for her, and there had been an allegation about she was soft on child pornography when she was a federal prosecutor, and Arpaio came out and did a political ad for her saying, this lady's a real law enforcement tough kind of a lady. So I think you're right. Steve Smith benefits by having all the police behind him this week.
And guys, before the break, not to say that Tom O'Halloran was not a fine candidate or a fine congressman, but didn't he get the Babu break in 2016 as well, where there was personal controversy there as well?
The infamous Babu break.
That, you may have coined a term. I've had like four or five Republican friends run that district and become the nominee and think they win, and then the Navajo vote comes in after midnight and they lose by 6,000 votes, and that's how that goes.
Well, so is O'Halloran looking stronger than Tom?
I think he is. I think Tom O'Halloran will repeat. He's done nothing wrong. He's run as a centrist. What's happening with the Republican Party in the state of Arizona is it moves further and further right. It's abandoning the right center field. Guys like O'Halloran, Sinema, can step into it quite nicely, and that's why they get elected.
That's Tom Ryan. Also here is Stan Barnes with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. This is the NewsCap on the show, which continues right after this.
And good Friday morning to you. You are listening to the show here on KJZZ at 91.5 and KJZZ.org. Well, thanks to all the members who made the $10 Thursday member drive a success. We heard from more than 380 listeners who became members. If you didn't have the chance to make your gift of support, you can still do so at KJZZ.org, and we thank you. In Valley traffic right now, westbound on the Loop 202 freeway, the Red Mountain Freeway at 24th Street, we've got a crash blocking the HOV and the left lane. And northbound on the Pima portion of the Loop 101 at Chaparral Road, a vehicle fire there. Partly sunny skies today. We're looking for a high near 102 degrees in Phoenix with a 30% chance of showers. It's cloudy and 84 degrees right now, and the time is 10:22.
KJZZ is supported by Arizona Secretary of State's office. With a reminder that early ballots are out, returning them as soon as possible can ensure your voice is heard. Visit arizona.vote for candidate info, polling locations, and deadlines.
Good morning. It's the Friday NewsCap here on 91.5 KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our panelists today, attorney Tom Ryan and former state lawmaker Stan Barnes, head of Copper State Consulting.
All right, guys, let's talk about another important race coming up in the primary. We just talked about the CD1 Republican primary. Let's talk about the U.S. Senate Republican primary as well. And Stan, we were talking about how the candidates in CD1 don't seem to really like each other that much. It seems like the same can be said for the candidates on the Republican side of the Senate race.
Yeah, I think you're dead on that. Arpaio is an exception. But the two ladies that are running are have the knives out, and I don't think can barely be in the same room together without the claws coming out. It's a very difficult situation there.
Well, how is that affecting voting? I mean, people, we obviously don't know how people are voting yet, but, you know, we've seen some polls that generally show Martha McSally ahead. The conventional wisdom is that she is the front runner. Do you think that she is, in fact, the front runner?
I do think she's the front runner. And all that analogy I was making earlier about divided Republicans and how they pay the price at the general is right there in that race as well. The McSally camp and the Kelly Ward camps, there's no overlap with them. And whoever comes out of that is going to suffer greatly in the general election because of that Republican phenomenon.
And what's so interesting about this is it seems that all three of the candidates really seem to be trying to get as close to the president as humanly possible and hug him as tightly as they possibly can, and yet you're saying there's not much overlap. Is it a personality thing or more of a policy thing?
Yeah, you nailed it. It's a personality thing. It's not a policy thing. And each is accusing the other of various misdeeds and being not genuine. But I think you've touched on a very important thing. The president is as controversial as any human being we've seen in our lifetimes, and these three Republicans are just wrapped themselves around him. And that's a very interesting thing. Martha McSally would not have done that if she didn't have to. And I think she had to, because the minute she got out of her district and went to the towns of Arizona, including Metro Phoenix, that's all she heard from Republicans that gather. Where are you on the president? And she simply could not waver on that and win the Republican primary.
All of them are saying, I'm the Trump favorite, I'm the Trump favorite, I'm the Trump favorite. It reminds me of the old game show from the 60s where three people would stand up and say, I'm Dan Smith and I did such and such. And you had to guess which one was the right one. I'm surprised we haven't brought up the elephant in the room in this race, Sacha Baron Cohen. I'll leave it there. No, it's just this is our pile is really coming on a lot stronger than I thought he was going to come, do in this race. And the interesting thing is, I don't think this Sacha Baron Cohen show that he just participated on, which is just the goofiest thing in the world, I don't think it's damaged him.
No, I don't think so either. He's going to play a very important role. All the conventional wisdom is he's a spoiler. And I think I share that conventional wisdom. I mean, if he was not in the race, I think Kelly Ward would be pulling ahead of Martha McSally. And I was with Martha McSally the other day, and I said, should I send money to Arpaio to keep him all, fluffed up? She said, yes, do. He is helping her because he splits the most adamant, rabid side of the party.
But this is what I think is going to happen here in this election. For better or for worse, what's going on here is, as they move to the right and wrap their arms around Trump, it's seeding a huge, large field over to Sinema when it comes time to the general election. It's going to be very hard if McSally comes out of this. It's going to be very hard for her to swing back to a more centrist point of view.
I can easily prognosticate Wayne Gretzky style where the puck's going in the general election. And the two ads you'll see will be the Republican nominee, whoever it is, married to Donald Trump, because Democrats think that's a winning hand for them. And Kirsten Sinema is going to get $10 million marrying her to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
Tom, this lets us in. So Nancy Pelosi was in Maricopa County this week to talk to certain Democrats. Some hugged her. Raul Grijalva was happy to have her around. There were other Democrats. Of course, Kirsten Sinema, though, wasn't around and even made it clear that she has not voted for Nancy Pelosi to be the minority leader for a while.
Nancy Pelosi to Kirsten Sinema is Pepe Le Pew. She doesn't want to be anywhere near that. Because the Republican strategy in defeating Democrats this year is to wrap the name of Nancy Pelosi around every such Democratic candidate. If you want more Nancy Pelosi politics, then elect someone like Kirsten Sinema.
Yeah, the Democrats are having their same spin to the left thing. I mean, everybody knows that. And your sophisticated listeners know that already. and so that's going to play out. Kirsten is going to have that laid on top of her and in the election. And she is also declaring, I'm not with Chuck Schumer. That's how far she's going.
It's interesting because what you're seeing here is Sinema has been able to spend money on advertising, framing the debate, framing her character and everything else. And she's done it, even though she does have a primary opponent. it's effectively defining her for purposes of not only the primary but for the general, and that is a huge advantage, I think.
Stan, briefly, how much has party politics changed? You and I have talked about it in the past where it was really a situation where the party kind of chose the candidate, and if someone else got in, okay, that's sort of at your own risk, I suppose, to some extent. Because why is it that whether it was John McCain build the dang fence or this thing with McSally, why is that okay in terms of the – I mean, I know that we're not all pure. I get that. But why is it okay to just say, oh, you know what, by the way, in order to win the primary, I'm going to do this. But that's not necessarily what I believe. Why is that okay?
This is – it's not a new phenomenon, Steve. Right. I hate to break it to you. it's not a – it's just now more evident because we're all paying attention.
It's so sad to see dreams crushed.
Yes, sorry. Your listeners
my
know that already.
My virgin ears, Stan. Thank you.
He seems so nice.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It's here to stay, I think, and on both sides. On both sides, it's here to stay. You got to play to the base, which is getting farther left on the left, farther right on the right, and then you got to go the middle.
I have two words. This is why. Citizens United. What's happened is we no longer have the power centered in within the Republican or Democratic Party. It's now gone out to these super PACs who have their own agenda, and this is what's happening. This is why you see the Democratic Party base moving further to the left and the Republican base moving further to the right.
We're going to get an independent governor sooner than later in
Stan
Arizona.
Stan Barnes.
Thank you. I'm announcing. That's the natural outcome of what Tom's describing, which I agree.
Tom,
with.
No one would ever call Stan independent.
Don't ruin it already.
Well, speaking of governors, let's talk about an election this week that was in not Arizona, but in Kansas, where somebody who's familiar to a lot of Arizonans, Kris Kobach, is in a tight race against the incumbent lieutenant governor, became governor when Sam Brownback left. Kris Kobach, of course, was very much involved in drafting Arizona's SB 1070. Is there anything that we can draw from that race specifically to Arizona's gubernatorial race? Obviously, it's a primary versus, you know, the primaries here in the general election. Anything in terms of maybe the effect of the president or these intra-party on either the left or right kind of situations we've been talking about?
Do you think, Stan, do you think immigration plays as big in Kansas as it does in Arizona?
As it turns out, it did.
I think it does. And I think that's the – if you want to find the connection, Mark, I think it's – the issue of immigration throughout the United States. That's a whole nother topic for another day. But the interesting thing about this particular election is you've got the Secretary of State overseeing his own primary election here. Now, he said he's going to step aside, but this morning there were reports from certain county recorders saying he's telling us how to report these things. So he hasn't effectively stepped away yet.
It is interesting. You reminded me that in the Senate deal, we didn't talk about Donald Trump could have endorsed one of those three. He knows all three of them, likes all three of them, evidently, but he has not. And that's an interesting phenomenon, too.
Does that matter, do you think, in that race?
I think it does. I think if Trump were to actually to get in the U.S. Senate Republican primary in Arizona, it would matter.
At what point would it be too late, though? I mean, obviously, a lot of people vote early, and yet we've seen recently a lot of people sort of hang on to their ballots till the end of the early voting period. Is there a point at which it would be too late if he's going to do it?
It would. I mean, sometime before Election Day, it would be too late. Something like a third. That's the kind of quality analysis.
I teed that right up for you, I guess.
Yeah, something like a third of the voters will be in the first 2 weeks, and the others hold out, like you said, or show up. We've all trained ourselves now because there's late breaking news, you get stuff, and so.
Yeah, I wonder to what extent maybe the Mercer family, which has come in very heavily for Kelly Ward in this case, has maybe said something to the Trump organization, take a powder. We want to put our money on Kelly Ward and see how it comes out.
I think Martha McSally actually has a personal relationship with the president, been in the Oval Office a number of times. They've actually, you know, done things together. And I think that's preventing him from following his instincts.
It may be.
As we wrap up here, guys, Stan, let me start with you. We don't have a crib sheet here, so if you don't have a great answer, I get it. But is there someone in Arizona, an incumbent running in Congress, who could be affected more or less by the Trump effect? And we saw that, you know, Debbie Lesko running in the Trent Franks open seat only won by a few points, but she still won. Any upsets you could see, not that you're predicting one, that you could see?
Got it. I'm going to go out on a limb here. You hit me cold. But I think the Republican in the District 9, I think, it's Sinema's district that she's vacating, is going to do better against Greg Stanton than everyone thinks. How's that for a prediction? Stanton's. I can barely name the Republicans running in that district, but I think that district is going to perform better for the Republican than everyone thinks. It's going to be a real race.
I think the Independent Redistricting Commission has done a fairly good job of creating some competitive districts, but they also have a lot of safe districts. I think the safe districts stay safe, and where you're going to see the changes are going to be maybe down in CD2, something like that.
Martha McSally's current district.
Right.
Okay, that's Tom Ryan, also here, Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting. Guys, thanks for joining us on the Newscap today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.